Today's episode of Atomic Moms is brought to you by Plated. Hurry over to plated.com/atomic now and get two meals free. That's plated.com/atomic. plated.com/atomic.
Hi.
Hi, pretty.
You look so pretty today. What's going on? You look like you're not wearing any makeup.
Well, I let my hair dry naturally.
Oh, maybe that's
part of it. That could be it.
Yeah, because you look really beachy and kind of
like. I know, I look super beachy.
I like it, though. If I let my hair air dry, that's not what happens.
No, usually it doesn't happen for
me. You know what Mike says I look like when I let my hair dry, especially now that I chopped it all off?
What?
For those of you who watch Game of Thrones, Arya Stark from.
Is that the little girl?
Yeah, she gets like the short fro hair when she's like.
How do you watch that show?
Oh, I love it.
I know
so much.
Everybody loves that show, but I can't. Every time I've just walked into the room, it's so violent.
It's so violent.
It freaks me out.
Do you want to know what's crazy? We watched it. Yes. We watched it. Right after Magnolia was born. We literally laid in bed every day
and watched it.
And I have such a warm, fuzzy bliss bubble around it because it reminds me
of that weirdo time. I couldn't even watch that. I got scarred after watching 5 minutes of that Shamu documentary on CNN. What was it?
Oh.
The whale thing?
Yeah, Blackfish. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Blackfish.
I watched just
10 minutes of that, and I was devastated.
But that stuff
is real. Everything devastates you right after.
But that stuff is real. To me, maybe it's also just being in the business and seeing so much of the behind the scenes. Like, I don't even watch shows anymore in a real sense that I'm like, I love it and I enjoy it and I'm entertained by it. But I'm also like, they screwed up in that shot.
So. I've been watching a lot of extras acting.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight, listeners, just like when you turn on the TV – just watch the extras in the background pretend to talk. It'll crack you up.
Oh, you know what I watched? Mike and I, our one guilty pleasure that I'm really embarrassed to admit, but we do watch The Bachelorette, and we call it The Bachelorette. And this season is just out of control. But it's like our one thing that we do that's totally mindless. And it was
you're
so crazy.
Getting so defensive about it. I'm not saying anything.
No.
How many nights a week is it, though? It's like one night.
It's just one night.
I thought it was two nights.
And actually, Mike only watches like the very beginning, and then he has to leave for work. And I'm always like, do you want me to pause it? And he goes, no. You can just tell me what happens. But it was really funny because I was watching it, and you know, they're always like walking through the streets in whatever town they're in and like lovey dovey and whatever. And for the first time in I don't know how many years I've been watching it, I noticed the people in the background that are just staring at them. And I was like, it finally occurred to me, like, they're not on a real date. Like, people are staring at them.
There's so many reasons it's not a real date.
Yes.
But one of the many reasons it's not a real date.
It's because there are cameras.
And they've probably rented out the restaurant so that they could have their
date. They were in, I don't know where they were, like Ireland or something. They're walking around and you can see everyone like in the park behind them just staring at them. And I was like, oh, how obnoxious is that? Like you're not focused. Because listen, for me, I've been at a restaurant where I've been recognized before.
Yeah.
And the minute that your anonymity is gone, it's so weird. Like the minute that you know that somebody that you don't know in the restaurant knows who you are and is watching you, you become so paranoid about everything that you do and everything that you say.
Manners get a little better.
Yeah. I'm not myself.
Right.
Because I get really kind of.
So you're concerned about the bachelor's date not seeming intimate for the bachelors?
Well, it makes sense why none of them really work because it's not a real date. Like they're not.
But my point is. You're acting like it's not a real date because people around them are watching them. It's not a real date because producers set them up and they're also dating like 12 other people simultaneously.
No, Ellie, that's real. I mean, I don't know how you date.
It's true
but
love.
It's true love.
It is sort of the Hollywood way in a way, right? Like publicists set people up all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of, interesting. Yeah. Well, maybe my next one.
Yeah.
I'll be like 45. Will they put me? I'll be the first 45-year-old bachelorette.
You know, they asked Mike to be the bachelor.
Stop it.
Right before right as we were dating, it was after he did Dancing with the Stars. They asked him to do the bachelor. And I laugh now knowing him because it would have been awful. I mean, it would have been worth the price of admission just to see somebody who is so socially awkward. Like,
well, and you need to explain that he's socially awkward because everyone knows him from Loveline. He's got like this big mouth and he talks about like in that he talks about anything ever. Like he's will talk about like
he's not socially awkward. He's socially awkward in the dating scene. Like
And he's like a quiet, private person in real life.
He was a recluse when I met him. I mean,
which people would be shocked by.
Yeah. I could barely get him out of his house. He had like some really, really kind of dark demons and some serious stuff. And so
it would have been perfect for The Bachelor.
It would have been awesome. I mean, it would have been such good television. We talk about that all the time.
So terrible. Oh, my God. Well, this is perfect because our guest today.
Yes.
Susan Pinsky is like in this kind of crazy world of celebrity and television. She is Dr. Drew's better half.
Yes. Yes. And she actually has a podcast herself on Sideshow Network, which is our parent company. And her podcast is called Calling Out with Susan Pinsky, and they have mediums and intuitives on all the time. It's a really fun one. Mike and I have been a guest a couple times, and I think she's going to get you on next.
I know. Atomic Moms are going to go on Susan Pinsky.
But Susan is so funny to me. She is this gorgeous, drop-dead sexy. You have to see, like, maybe we'll find one of her red carpet pictures with Drew to put up, because she's always like dressed to the nines in these amazing like body hugging dresses, and you're just like,
love it.
Go Drew.
And I can't believe she had triplets.
She's gonna talk to us about, gosh, getting pregnant.
And now they're 22 years old.
And they just graduated from college, and they're fantastic kids. And she and Drew are just such an amazing couple, and their story is really great. And she's hilarious.
She is wild, and we need to go to Vegas and do a bunch of shots with her and, like, dance on tables.
She'd probably love it.
Because this – I can't wait to hear what she has to say on this podcast today. It's going to be good, guys.
So let's jump in.
It's been on your mind all day. Because last night was, in a word, delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't wait to do it again in the kitchen tonight with Plated. Plated is for busy people who love cooking fresh, exciting new dishes but don't have the time to drive all over town searching for chef-quality ingredients. With Plated, you don't have to. Here's how it works.
Go to plated.com/atomic and choose from amazing chef-designed recipes each week. You'll find easy-to-prepare selections that fit everyone's taste. Then the culinary pros at Plated lovingly fill a refrigerated box with just the perfect pre-portioned ingredients for your dinner, so nothing is wasted.
Everything's delivered to your door. Fresh meat, poultry, fish, farm-fresh veggies, spices, everything you need on the date you choose.
And no worries if you aren't home. Your Plated box keeps everything fresh until midnight on the day it arrives.
Prepare chef-quality meals in 30 minutes or less.
Hurry over to plated.com/atomic now and get 2 meals free. That's right, 2 meals free. That's plated.com/atomic. Plated.com/what is it, everybody?
Atomic.
And we're back.
Hello. So we are joined by our guest, Susan Pinsky.
Hello.
Who is a friend of mine, but also a podcast maven, mother of three twins.
Three twins. How is that possible?
No, triplets. Oh, geez. What is wrong with me? Triplets. Yes. I haven't settled yet. And
that's good.
Yes. Triplets. That's right. And is the wife of Dr. Drew Pinsky, which is how we met because our husbands work together.
I know, yes, the wives are getting together. Those men should be nervous.
They work together very well.
They do work together very well, and they're working together a lot more often now. I'm getting a little bit of the a view into what your life has been like, because my husband is no longer home.
Welcome to my world.
So I want to start off with that, because your husband might be the busiest man in all of America. I mean, I think he's right up there.
He puts Ryan Seacrest to shame.
Oh, 100%.
Not monetarily. That's probably why he keeps working so hard.
Well, you got triplets. I mean, you got to.
Yeah. So has Drew always worked this much?
Yes.
Since you guys have been together.
Absolutely. In medicine, you work 100-hour weeks, and it's actually easier to be in media than being a doctor.
That is such a great point.
It's 24 hours a day. You know, your pager goes off all night long. I mean, from the beginning, we used to be woken up a million times every night for his ill patients. And – this is actually pretty laid back comparatively.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess that makes sense. I didn't even think about it. My dad was an anesthesiologist, so I know there were like, I mean, there would be times when he'd have a 72-hour call and he just wouldn't be home that whole time.
And you don't get paid very well in medicine as well. I mean, it's a thankless job, really.
Right.
And there's so many better parties now for you guys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Much better parties.
He was an internist, right?
Yeah, it's a little different, a different scene.
Wait, and you were telling me the story for the first time. I didn't realize that I had no idea how you guys had met.
Oh, wait. We have this in common.
What?
So please share how you guys met.
Yes, I met Drew. Actually, we met twice. I met him in a bar before I started working at the radio station.
That's what we share in common. I met my husband at a bar.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, we ran into each other and I blew him off. He hit on me after one of my little bikini fashion shows, which I was working in a bikini shop and I was doing PR for my boss. And we'd put on, like, during the happy hour, we would, you know, promote the show and girls would come out with balloons and bikinis. And then Drew happened to be
Were
sitting.
Were you in a bikini?
No, I was the announcer. I was the woman with the girl with the microphone.
She could be, and she could model bikinis even now. Your body is slamming.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But you were in the position of power. You were at the microphone.
I was running it, and I had met Drew, and he hit on me and told me I looked like a model he knew. And I said, well, I've heard that one before. And then I walked out. Then we met again on the radio on Loveline when I was doing PR for the Bikini Girls, which was a promotion that I ran for the radio station. So basically I took this little underdeveloped job from Diane's Bikinis and turned it into a promotional show for the radio station because they handed me a bunch of models to work with. And so I was promoting an event at, you know, Florentine Gardens or something. And I walked in and Drew was sitting in the studio and he had been hired to answer medical questions. And this was like in 1982 or 83. And he was like 24 years old. I was like 23. And he said, oh my God, it's the love of my life. And I'm sure he did that with every girl that walked in. But
he was right this time.
But I wasn't dating anybody. I was sort of breaking up with a guy that I was with when I said no to him the first time. And we didn't even know that we had met before. So I went out on a date with him. And then the rest is history. He said, well, when you break up with your boyfriend, you know, give me a call. So I broke up with my boyfriend. And then we started dating. And he was very romantic. He took me out to a nice dinner. He bought a bottle of wine. In those days, you know, the guy I was dating, I don't think he even had a credit card. But it was very romantic. But Drew was just out of medical school. And I fell in love, I guess. It's funny. And I know that you met Mike when you were on Loveline as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it was like a love at first sight. I mean, I should say lust at first sight. Like, I just, when I saw him, I was tongue-tied. I couldn't speak for 2 hours.
When you found out you were pregnant with triplets, how soon after you were married? Like, within a year? Or?
Well, we dated for about 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Because he had to go through his medical training. He'd just basically gotten out of medical school. Then he had to do his internship, and then he was... Then he had to do his residency. Then he was the chief resident. So it was like 7 years of sort of getting his internal medicine specialty. Mm-hmm. And he was the chief resident of the Huntington Hospital. So he was really busy. Like, this, that's like around the clock work. So he gets his work ethic basically.
We've watched Grey's Anatomy. We know what that means. I'm totally kidding.
So he didn't really want to settle down. I was ready after like 3 years. I was ready to go because I told him, I said, you know, I really don't want to get pregnant when I'm 40, you know, and he didn't want to get married till he was a lot older. So we dated 7 years, then we got engaged, and we lived together for a year because I wanted to test it out, make sure I didn't not want to do this.
Now, is Smart. He a slob, or is he? I imagine he's very like meticulous.
He's in between. Okay. You know, I had to teach him how to get the underwear in the hamper. And
can you come over to my house, please?
I mean, all men are like that. I mean, he is definitely male. His closet's pretty organized, but it doesn't have that gay ring to it, you know.
Right.
He's kind of semi.
How about like flecks of
toothpaste spit on the mirror. Does he do that?
You know, our deal, we broke up for a period of time. And when we got back together, he said, I really want to get back together with you. Is there whatever you need, I'll be happy to get. And I said, make sure I just have a maid. That's all. Because I am tired of cleaning up your shit. Because at the beginning, it was extremely disgusting. I'd show up in his bathroom, and the bathtub was just coated with whatever. And I'd spend like an hour cleaning it just so that I could shower in there. And, you know, I know what you're talking about. I completely forgot about this. But so now we just make sure that there's somebody handy to clean up. But now as he's gotten older and everything, you know, I got to say, I'm probably a bigger slob than he is. But I was super... I was super anal about it before I had kids. And then when I had triplets, I literally lost that. I had to let it go. It's just like, oh, well, there's that pile. It's just going to have to wait. You know, I have priorities right now.
Yeah.
But when we dated for 7 years, get back to where I was, we lived together for a year. We got married. And literally after the honeymoon, I ran into the in vitro specialist and I got pregnant. So there was like an hour and a half honeymoon.
Right. Wow.
And getting pregnant was not really a problem for me. It was just getting the egg from point A to point B, and the fertility was definitely there. I went through in vitro fertilization, and I knew that I had some issues biologically where I couldn't, my fallopian tubes weren't working correctly. So we knew that ahead of time. We kind of had some medical research done.
Right.
And I thought maybe, you know, we're going to have to start it. I was 31 when we got married, and both of us were. And I thought I was going to have to, you know, take a few years to get pregnant, and wanted to get a jump on things.
Right.
Because we dated 7 years. Mm-hmm. We had a great long relationship and good times. You know, I had all that fun before marriage and had a great wedding, had a great honeymoon. And then, boom, pregnant. But I actually had 5 embryos implanted and 4 took. So I thought I was going to have quadruplets.
Oh, my God.
For 12 weeks. And, and, you know, we had to decide whether we wanted to reduce it and I was really not into that. I'm seriously not into reducing anything when it comes to children. But but they said there would be a lot of chance of the baby's not coming out full term or whatever. So... for 12 weeks, we shook in our shoes, and we listed the pros and cons of having 2, because they would reduce to 2 if I wanted to, and I didn't want to, but we decided that the pros and the cons were pretty even. You know, the college thing is really expensive. You know, how are we going to afford this? Is it going to be hard on your body? Are you going to... you know, how are we going to handle this emotionally? You know, I'm going to have to get 3 more jobs. You know, there were so many things. But we worked together, and we just really saw that it was doable. So we went in at 12 weeks for our ultrasound. The only 3 were there.
Wow.
One had just was sort of a shadow egg, a ghost egg, I think they call it, or something.
Yeah.
And it had dissipated into the uterus. So I was just exhilarated. I'm only having 3.
Right. And you didn't have to make that choice.
Right.
That's so difficult.
Yeah, I didn't. I probably would have gone for 4.
Yeah.
Had I known, you know, I was really healthy, and I guess I have good genes or something, but I made it to 35 weeks with triplets. So those 3 came out at, I had 17 pounds of baby. Paulina was 5 pounds, Jordan was 5'8", and Douglas was 6'9".
Oh, my God.
Mine was 6'9". My little girl was 6'9", all by herself. She had like a penthouse. There's 3 in there. And how long were you on bed rest?
I was on 6 out of the 9 months. What? Because I had...
Oh, my God. No, there's no way.
Yeah. When they harvest the eggs, they have to go in and pluck the eggs off your ovary. And after they sort of produce these eggs, these little, and then to mix with the sperm, and then they implant it. But when they plucked it off my ovary, somehow my ovary became really swollen and big, about the size of a grapefruit. So I had to lay in bed for 3 months. so that I wouldn't tweak my fallopian tubes. So the first 3 months I laid in bed.
And you weren't even that pregnant.
Drinking Gatorade and Ensure. That's what they gave me. So to sort of, I go, I don't know why, but so.
And did you have any morning sickness?
I had horrible morning sickness to the point where I was just like the first 12 weeks, I wanted to just die. And then the 12 weeks came or whatever, I don't know what the cutoff is. Yeah. It literally stopped like that day.
Yeah.
And I was so excited. I jumped in the car and went to the market, and then I slammed my finger in the door of my Porsche and broke my finger. And I was like, oh my God.
This is in her Porsche.
So LA. I love it. I can like see it right now. Oh, what color was the car?
And I was so happy for the second, I guess, trimester.
Yeah.
And I was so happy during that time because I could move around and I could get the baby's room ready. But at 21 weeks, I was full term. So I looked like a pregnant cow, basically.
At 21 weeks,
yes.
Full term.
So I started going into labor at 21 weeks, and then they wired me up with tributyline pump, which basically stops the labor. So every time you start going into labor, you push this little button on it, and it slows down the process. So I laid in bed for 3 more months, and drank a lot of water.
And did you watch movies? Or
I could barely watch anything because anything that stimulated me sexually, or like if somebody kissed on TV, it would put me into labor.
No.
You're being told out. Like, how crazy. Like, they would know that you were turned on by that.
My sex drive was amazing, and we couldn't have sex.
You couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Did he sleep in the basement?
Poor Drew. I feel so bad for him because he was so good about it, too. He went, like, 9 months. I think we had sex, like, once on our anniversary. The doctor said we could. So I felt really sorry for him. But it was hard for me, too. And I could watch Wheel of Fortune.
What are the least turn on?
Price is Right.
What are the biggest turn offs?
If I could watch Oprah. I watch a lot of Oprah because they're pretty G rated. But if a soap opera came on, forget it. It was over.
So hilarious. Did you have a lot of anxiety during this time in terms of being in a constant state of labor? I mean, were you nervous that they weren't going to make it to the full term?
I was like a science project, just felt like I had to go in, I had to get those blood tests, I had to get those shots, and the good news is Drew was so great at administering all the medications that I had to take at the beginning, and also just having, I had a lot of support, his parents, his dad was great, he's a medical doctor as well. But more than that, just everything's about babies. Everything's about what's going on inside of you.
Yeah.
You put yourself second. And when I was 33 weeks pregnant, I developed a Bell's palsy. And Drew came home.
Oh, my God, Susan.
The left side of my face, because you get really swelled up. Like, and there's like a nerve in your face that goes through your skull, and when I was so swelled up, it shut it off, so half of my face went completely dead, so I was like drooling out of one side and my eyes wouldn't shut. That's, I was so like, David, cool. Shut.
My father-in-law, when my husband's sister got married, that morning he woke up, father of the bride woke up with Bell's palsy.
Oh my God.
And so all the photos, half of his face is paralyzed.
So I have a picture of myself when I was pregnant, and I'm the night before I'm giving birth, and I have this really sad look on my face because I couldn't smile because it was like I looked cockeyed and
smiling.
I looked so funny. So but Drew came home and my arm was tingling and my face had stopped working, and he thought I was having a stroke.
Oh my God.
And it's just so funny because I'm just like, I don't care. It's for the babies. I want these babies to come out okay. We'll keep them. I mean, I could have delivered at that point. I should have. But they couldn't see Douglas. He looked very small because he was hidden underneath. And he was 6'9".
And he was the biggest one.
So they rushed me to the hospital. I went to the hospital a lot at the end, for many things. I had an ileus, which is a bowel obstruction, and it felt like I was in labor, so I'd go to the hospital, and then we'd come home, and they'd give me all these weird things for it. And finally, he took me in, and they put me in the hospital for 2 weeks. They basically gave me steroids for my face, and then, you know, it came back. It's a little bit off still, you know. I have to work on the Botox to even my eyebrows out. But it's like I was willing to do whatever it took to get these babies out healthy and happy, and they came out perfectly fine and didn't have to stay in the hospital. I did, but they literally were ready to go home.
What a marathon to begin your journey as a parent of three children.
Yeah. What did you do to prepare yourself for having triplets? I mean, was there anything specific that you did? I mean, I can't even imagine. I was overwhelmed by the idea of having a baby. The idea that you're going to have three. I mean, what do you do?
Well, I remember kind of a funny story about you when you were pregnant and you guys were on my podcast. And and Mike said that you were spending a lot of money on baby stuff. Remember that?
Yeah.
Because that's what you do when you're really hormonal. It's just like, oh, I want this. And I was getting three of everything. I had so much stuff. I spent $100,000.
Susan!
I had my credit card memorized. But here's the good part.
You're allowed. You're on bed rest. I mean, what else are you going to do?
I couldn't. No wonder no wonder you guys had this conversation about how many jobs he was going to need to have.
I couldn't control myself. Okay, so I had all this money in the bank, which it seemed like we were doing fine. And then I found out that this accountant that I had for many years who is now no longer with us, thank God. I'm not dead, but I kind of wish she was. She didn't pay our payroll taxes for the entire year, so I thought I had all this money in the bank, and we got the bill at the end of the year, and I had already spent it all on baby.
Oh my God! You're like, don't go into the nursery.
It's
honey.
A miracle I'm still married to this man. He was so supportive. I swear to God, I feel so bad about it, but I did prepare myself well. I had every gadget. I had lots of help. Once I did make a mistake when I was pregnant not to hire a baby nurse before I gave birth, and I ended up I had to interview a bunch of people going through the process. So I give people advice to definitely plan in advance, because you think you can take care of things, but it is such an endeavor. How do you bathe three babies? I've never bathed a baby in my life, right? I have three babies. You know, just giving them a bath was the scariest thing in the world. Like, they're slippery, you know? They're just
amazing.
Yeah, so.
And one at a time. What do the other two do while the one's being?
Well, we had a lot of, I hired round-the-clock help at the beginning and then, you know, tapered off after a while. But being left alone with three babies is impossible. I could not handle it. The first time I did it, I was trying to feed them. I had one in the car seat with a bottle, one in the little swing with a bottle, and then the other one in my hand. And then at one point, the one in the car seat kind of rolled off the couch. Fortunately, he was in a car seat. That was Douglas, of course. You know,
of course.
He's always the one that wasn't getting in trouble. But so I was like, okay, I can't do this. And then the second time, when they were like a little bit older, I was alone with all three of them at the same time. And Douglas went to the front door and answered the front door, and there was a policeman there or something, like going, did you know your baby just entered the front door? I was like, oh.
It's free range parenting.
I don't know why the police were there. I'm not quite sure.
Uh-oh, that's the real story.
I don't remember. No, but I did realize that personally, I mean, some women can do this. They can take care of three babies at the same time, but I literally had to have somebody with me. Yeah. For the last 22 years. I mean,
God bless those mamas out there listening that do have twins or triplets
that can do
it. And
it's a very important point to make. Somebody along the way, and it might have been Sada Simran, another one of our guests, said to me, it's very important that you know the kind of parent that you can be. And that there's no shame in saying I'm not somebody, you know, who can do this on my own with even one child. And that the power is in knowing that that's what you're capable of and then asking for help.
I tried. I wanted to do it so bad. I was so tired of having people in my house all the time. I mean, I had anywhere from two to three people in my house at any given time between the grandparents and the help. Because we just ran in circles all day long for the first, you know, 3 years until they were in school. You know, when you get them into preschool, it's like, hallelujah. I mean, the people in those preschools are saints for taking these babies. I gave them 3 monkeys, like, out of the wild. And it was like, oh, my God. Thank you for taking them. I mean, we had to do all the mommies and mommy and me's, and we had to do, you know, you're always trying to find something to do. And it's a lot of work. You have, you know, you put them in the stroller and you walk around Disneyland. That's about all you can do to entertain right. 3 babies. I mean, I see how Bianca takes care of her baby. She's got these little kits with the toys and that. It's just, she's got it all planned out. And it's all so organized. And that baby is so happy all the time. And I mean, I can learn from you, and because you.
Why are you going to do it again soon?
No, but I when I have grandchildren.
Yes.
But I do. But we were real creative like that too. We literally had like an area all roped off with. I bought the gym mats from like Gymboree, and I just filled the room with them and made it so that if they fell and hit their head, they'd be okay. And we turn on Disney videos all day long. Like, I bought every Disney video known to earth, known to man. And that's why Drew's really up on all the Disney characters. But
that's so cute.
No, so, I mean, we just kind of keep it like singing and dancing all day and goofing around. But I would have to have somebody with me. There's no way.
I know. How did you keep your relationship afloat in the midst of Drew working and having triplets? I mean, what do you guys – did you guys have anything special that you did? Because to me, that's what – you guys have a fantastic relationship, and I love watching
you guys.
It's amazing
we made it this far. I can't tell you. I'm really fortunate that I met him. He's seriously an anomaly in a lot of ways. A lot of women can see that. If you ever go walking around with him, he gets accosted by women constantly. Like, I love you. I love you. And can I take a picture? And
Silver Fox.
Yeah. No, but he's just a good guy. Yeah. He's super good. And he's really dedicated to me. And once I had these babies, I was kind of an a-hole before I got married too, because, you know, most of us are, but... after I gave birth, I think he just really appreciated that, and he knew he's the kind of guy that appreciates women for the gift of life and family, and he's just one of those guys. So I'm really fortunate that way, because our sex life kind of went out the window, and that's a really important factor in our relationship. At the time after I gave birth, everything changed because my hormones were really not the same. And I ended up having to go to therapy and go on antidepressants. And, you know, when I was having really hormonal issues, which could have been addressed a little bit better, but I did. And I, you know, it.
What do you mean it could have been addressed a little bit better?
What I realized later was I went into perimenopause a lot earlier than most. And so I was sort of dealing with mood swings and anxiety problems and lack of desire because I was going into menopause.
Oh, interesting. Meanwhile, and were people just saying, oh, it's because you have triplets?
Yeah, and you're nuts, or, you know, let's get you a therapist. you're crazy.
I've never heard that one.
You need to go take care of that. Like, well, and I wanted to, you know, kill my kids in the middle of the night sometimes. Like, I would just, like, I have to sleep, you know. And Douglas would wake up, and he would spit his sucky out in the middle of the night, and then I'd have to get up, and he just was really not doing well, because what we didn't know when he was 6 months old was that he had an arachnoid cyst. So I had, you know, when we discovered that, then we realized what the problem was. But at a certain point, I did want to kill him for waking me up. So they put me on Prozac at that point.
Wait, two questions. What is an arachnoid cyst?
Okay, so... arachnoid cyst is a cyst that it was on his left cerebellum. It sort of intertwines with the brain. Wow. And so, because arachnoid is like a spider, so it kind of intertwines. And he had this on his left cerebellum, which caused him to have sort of a mood disorder. Like when he ate, he would start crying afterwards, and or he would wake up in the middle of the night and he'd need comforting, and or he had bad balance. And so we discovered it. We were in Vegas, and a couple of nannies, we decided to get away and have some fun. And he was jumping on a bed, you know, like one-year-olds do. And he kind of flew off and hit the ground. And then he kind of went limp. And I had just read in Parent magazine that when a child goes limp after they hit their head, that you need to call an ambulance. So we called the ambulance. Drew came up. I mean, there were three adults in the room. It was really weird why he fell, but it was basically because this thing had changed his balance center. So we got to the hospital. We thought he had broken his neck because we thought that was it. And they found this cyst on his brain because they had this great CAT scan machine. And you got to understand, this is like in the 90s. So
yeah. And at this point, is Dr. Drew, Dr. Drew? Like, yeah. Do the other doctors recognize him as a celebrity?
Yeah,
like,
we had basically, well, not the celebrity level he is now, but he was doing the Loveline syndicated radio show, and he was about ready to do the television with MTV. But it was kind of they were young, so they're babies. And so, sweet. But I did get a lot of fan mail and stuff. It was really cute. But Douglas had to go in and have brain surgery, basically, at age 13 months.
And, oh, my God.
And that was a new shift in life because we had this suddenly possibly handicapped child. You know, we didn't even know what was going to happen. But the surgery was successful. They drained the cyst. It never grew after that. He had some learning disabilities and he had some speech pathology, and then we had to go to speech pathologists, and we had so on top of raising triplets, so we had this one that we had to keep.
Right.
And then we had to go to some psychotherapy because he got aggressive at a certain point because he couldn't talk, so he'd bite the other ones or he'd hit them, and we had to, like, you know, so because much. He couldn't use his words, like, for right. example, like, I see Magnolia's development, and she is extremely bright and speaks like I met her at the restaurant. I asked her a question, she answered it. I was like, oh my gosh. She goes, yeah, I know. Yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever. But my kids, their speech was already a little bit developmentally behind because they are triplets and they do develop their own little language with one another.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And there's not as much one-on-one time. And I'm not a preschool teacher, so I literally was just like, okay, what language are we speaking today? Can we just get through the day? But be that as it may, they all got into the preschool of their choice, and they all had their, you know, developmentally, we got them all ahead, and they, you know, we worked the system, and basically Douglas is doing great, and he's, you know, he does have to deal with some of his organizational skills are a little different, and the way that he studies is different. But he's a master at piano and a brilliant singer and opera singer, and he's just graduated from a great school. And it just, you know, but it, there was always sort of this feeling in the back of our head, like, how's this going to work out for him? And you always worry about that. I mean, I was more concerned once they were out what they were going to turn into than when they were inside of me.
Yeah.
Did he bond with his daddy with the opera?
Yeah, he basically has some kind of weird genetic ability to play music. And we have music on my side of the family and some kind of idiot savant music side. And then we also have Drew's opera voice on the other side. He got the mixture of the two. Pauline is a really great musician too, but she was more of a dancer singer, and she sang some opera as well. And then, but Douglas just got this gift of his voice. But he's, you know, that was sort of part of the healing process for him too. You know, having music, and that always made him happy. When he'd get frustrated or if he had problems, he would just get himself immersed into piano, you know, and he would just use music to make himself feel better if he wasn't doing well in school or if he was, you know, not getting along with people at school. You know, he had to develop this system to cope with whatever the outcome was of the arachnoid cyst. Because when you do have brain surgery, it changes your brain to have your brain opened up. But he's normal. But it was scary. It was really scary because we were like, oh crap, we're going to have something wrong with him, you know. And then the other two also had to put up with all the attention we were giving him.
Yeah.
And how did you do that over the years? How did you forge a relationship with each of your children separately?
I think that my daughter and I were closer because, you know, girls hang around each other a little bit more. I think that out of the three, Jordan kind of was a little more left out of the situation. And he is my middle child. He was born second.
I love it. How many minutes is he middle?
He's like 5 minutes. Okay. But there is a middle personality even with triplets. Yeah. So
amazing.
But I see it now because he also was always, well, when Douglas was sick, I think he sort of became really independent, and he was always my moral compass of the three. So I would give him little jobs and stuff, and he did that along the way, but I think he kind of got tired of it at a certain point. He doesn't want to do that anymore, you know. He's literally like he just wants to do his own thing now. So Douglas and I probably are a lot closer because of the fact that I spent so much time helping him heal and helping there is a connection that's a little bit different. It's hard to explain, not because I love him anymore than the other two, but I think just because we had a lot more one-on-one time, a lot more bond. And I knew that he was in pain after he had brain surgery, and I had to help him deal with that. And cause they can't talk. The arachnoid cysts are really complicated, and if you ever Google it, I mean, you'll see it changes people's lives. And we got so lucky that we caught it when we did, and that nothing horrible happened to the point where he's having to cope with it. And
what are even symptoms of
Well, basically, you know how they used to measure babies' heads?
Yeah.
You know, in the olden days?
Yeah, they still do.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Well, I had three, and I had two with, like, you know, 90% or 80%, 75 percentile head size, and then Douglas had, like, 100 percentile. So he had this thing, and I was like, if you're going to measure their heads and when you see a difference, like, you should maybe look into that, you know?
Right.
At your findings. But that wasn't really a symptom. His symptom was he was agitated after he ate. He couldn't, I mean, I'd watch the three of them try to walk. The other two could walk. He would walk and then he'd fall down. He was, there was a certain point where I got really anxious about it. I went to the pediatrician. I said, something's really wrong. He cries after he eats. It's really weird. And he goes, well, here's this book, The Willful Child. You need to read this. So I followed all the directions in The Willful Child. And it helped a little bit, but it wasn't going away. So, you know, basically I had reached out to my doctor and said, well, he's different than the other two. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing to do is to use your intuition and to try to use your instincts to basically get your pediatricians to take notice to it, you know. And I did know that he wasn't swallowing and he didn't like, but he loved to eat. He was the biggest eater of the three of them. And after dinner, I'd have to walk him around and stuff. He was agitated, but it was because he had the pressure of this thing growing in his head. I don't know. I think the nerve may have been attached to his tongue and he couldn't swallow correctly. So that was another symptom. But I just wish that I was a little pushier.
Well, we've talked about that with another guest of ours before. And I know, like with Magnolia, she had, I mean, it was a very small thing, but she had torticollis. And I just think it's so important. Like, I feel like so many parents think that, like, if they say something, they're scared to ask a dumb question or, you know, seem ignorant about things. And it's like, there's no harm in just speaking up because, you know, it was weird. Even me, when I went into my doctor and I said, it seems like her head tilts a little bit to the left when she's sitting. And he took a closer look, and I don't think doctors are missing things on purpose, certainly not, but sometimes there's so much to look at, they might miss a little thing that they might not see because you're not informing them about what you're seeing at home.
And if you don't if they brush you off, find somebody else and ask them.
Yes.
Because sometimes you end up with
something more serious. Well, pediatricians are not necessarily like internal medicine specialists. It's you have to find a good one, and you have to use your intuition when you're in the hospital. And I was at Children's Hospital with Douglas for the week. They basically leave you with your child to decide what to do. And when Douglas came out of surgery, he was making this weird whining noise. And, you know, when you're in the hospital, you have to go to the nurse's station and go, I think there's something up. I think there's something wrong. But Drew actually walked in and he heard this weird noise he was making and said, that's not normal. So we got the doctor in and his head was swelling. So, I mean, fortunately, he saved Douglas's life.
That's it. It's not only when you're wondering if something's wrong, like when you're at the hospital, like you have to be vigilant.
Mothers have the best instinct with their children. And sometimes we seem a little bit over the top anxious and angry or whatever. You know, I want my child to have the best. But too bad. That's the way it goes. Yeah. You're here to protect the baby and develop a human being to its full potential. And if you see it and have to do something about it, you're the only person who may be able to save that child. And Douglas was, you know, always my problem child. He had many, many more events as he went on. It was kind of funny. He was the one who needed his appendix removed. He broke his arm. He broke his leg. He had, you know, it was one thing after another with him. The other two had never had surgery. It's so weird. It's like some cosmic thing with him where he had to be the one to have all the problems.
Yeah.
It's almost like in his previous lifetime, he did something to deserve this. But I swear to God.
Or maybe there's some lesson there for you. Like maybe I don't know. Like maybe it's about, because I don't want to put that on him.
We actually laugh about it because he's going, it's always me. You know, why am I the one? Now he's doing great. Like he's
but
turned everything.
But it seems like it softened you potentially, like because you had this child that needed your help,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And so it was able to really tap into your motherly instincts, and you're probably a stronger person.
I just wish that I was a little bit pushier, but being a doctor's wife, you don't want to be super pushy with medical doctors because I do ask a lot of questions and I do write them down before I go to the pediatrician.
And aren't you why Drew found out about his prostate cancer?
Yeah. Well, because he was getting sick a lot. You know, I do see when my kids are sick. I mean, fortunately, well, not everything. I mean, honestly, Douglas got typhus too, and I didn't diagnose that. But
well,
Douglas got typhus.
I mean, we gotta have him on the show so he can defend himself.
Oh no, he'll tell you. He's okay. Just like, why is it always me?
And it's funny too because he was the biggest, right?
Yeah.
He was the biggest baby, and you would think that
he would
be the hardier.
Oh yeah, and you know, they're. It's just a running joke in the family now, and he has a good sense of humor about it. But I did notice that Drew was sick quite a bit, and he didn't have his own doctor, so he kept diagnosing himself with some weird, you know, flea-borne disease. I went to New York and I ate some fish and I got food poisoning, and then he was sick for a week, and then a couple weeks later he'd be sick with something else, and then we went on a trip to the Virgin Islands, and he thought he got some flea-borne disease while he was there, and you know, it ended up being H1N1, but I didn't get it. Like he was sick all these times with these viruses, and I was like completely healthy, and I'm thinking, you know, if you've got a virus, why am I not catching this?
Right.
And maybe I had H1N1 before, but
was he thinking, well, it's just because I'm working so hard, I'm run down?
Yeah, no.
Or what was his reasoning why you wouldn't get it?
He just came up with some weird diseases that he had. He's hypochondriac.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever the worst thing it could be, that's what it is. And he's like twittering it in the hospital.
I know, that's rough when you're a doctor. You know all these things.
He had to do damage control because he was like having a 200 degree fever and he was like twittering, and I'm in the hospital. And next thing you know, his manager was like, could you tell him to just stop tweeting. He's not dying of a disease. And anyway, so
the publicist is like, shut it down.
No, Mike always says, Mike's like, Drew's problem is that he knows too much.
Yes.
And so it's like,
I mean, medical school.
But when the kids were sick with something really bad, like typhus, I would go, oh, yeah, he's got a whatever. And he'd go, no, 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 this is bad. And then we'd find out Douglas had typhus. So he's good at calling certain things. And his medical intuition has saved everybody in my family. Like, he saved my left eye, and he saved my life in the hospital after I gave birth. And he saved Douglas a couple of times. I mean, he seriously, he comes in handy. It's actually a great thing to have around the house.
Sabrina, marry a doctor. That's my daughter. So really quickly, because then we've got a million more questions. So he just was sick with the flu or different viruses. And then what happened to find out he had prostate cancer?
I told him that he needed to get an internist. And I said, you know, it's time, because I had just gotten one of these like concierge service things where you go in and you pay at the beginning of the year. I said, you know, I like this guy. He went to Poly like you did, and he's younger than us. And, you know, let's just get you a doctor. And he's like, I my friends have been helping me. I said, come on, let's just pay the money. You're like, he likes to make money, doesn't like to spend it. I just do that for him. But so anyways, I signed him up, and he went in, and they took the blood test, and they found his PSAs were kind of high. And they his father had prostate cancer, and his uncle. But he was very young to have PSAs at this level. So he went in to a specialist, and they started checking into it. We actually got a guy he liked in Pasadena, and they were like, you know, this really has to go. It's not good. So it was really kind of a bad experience, because my kids had just gone to college, and
empty nest syndrome.
Yeah, we just finally were having that second honeymoon. That's why, you know, when he got H1N1, I was like, why don't I? We've been kissing all week. There's no reason for me to not be sick.
Adam always says I'm the carrier. Whenever like he gets sick and I don't, he says I'm the carrier. It's very loving.
But I guess Drew thinks it's worth it. So,
and how did that? His recovery and post-cancer.
The interesting thing was, you know, I have sort of this mantra where when your kids go off to college, you just want them to have that first year experience and have it be really awesome and not give them any extra baggage while they're there, because they're just trying to be out in the world by themselves for their first year in their dorm and their friends. So we didn't tell them, you know, that he had been diagnosed with cancer. So because we just really didn't know how difficult or how bad it was going to be. So we tried to, like, help them get through their first year, but we were scared, you know, to death, you know, like, oh, my gosh, this is really horrible, you know? I mean, what if? So, and Drew gets a little dramatic, too, about stuff like that, and he likes to think the worst, and I'm like, don't do that, you know? But after he had a few more tests, 6 months later, it was getting a little bit more aggressive. So we had to consider the surgery because of his age. They can't use radiation. They have to remove it completely. So basically what they have to do is go in with robotics and take the prostate out. And it's a big surgery, huge surgery. And you can't work. And he had a couple of TV shows in production, and we didn't really want them to know, because you can't get insurance and then you may not get renewed. And he had an entire television crew and everything. So we were trying to put it off as long as possible to see if, you know, he could find a space open. So we had to plan it like a year away. Then we changed doctors. We ended up with this amazing guy, Dr. Holden at Cedars, and he gave us another 6 months, but we literally had to clear the slate for an entire year, because, you know, the way that Hollywood is, you book in advance and then you work based on bookings from the year before previously. So he just cleared out his schedule and he went in for surgery. The kids knew at this point. After the first year of college, we let them know. But he spent the summer on the porch, and the surgery was a huge success. It was difficult. It was not an easy surgery. It was pretty close to having triplets, or you know, something like that. It was a big one. You know, abdominal surgery is not pretty. And plus, it's just, you know, you have the possibility of the outcome of it not being on the upside, if you know what I mean.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. But Nurse Susan did her job, and basically everything's working fine now, girls. So that. Nobody Good. Has to worry.
See, the and triplets you, was just training camp.
Did you, are you closer than ever because of this experience?
Like, well, he thought I was a horrible nurse, okay? which is probably true on some level, but he also was, it was a very difficult time for him. He doesn't really realize how much I did at the beginning because he was really out of it from all the drugs. And I do want to... But I do also want to say I'm not the best of all nurses in the world, but that's because he's so amazing at it.
Yeah, well, he must have had a hard time.
I'm the exact opposite.
Giving over the control.
Well, and it's hard because it's hard to see someone that you love in pain and discomfort.
It was hard, and I have, you know, I work differently. He is also not the greatest person to have just sitting around the house for 3 or 4 months at a time with nothing to do.
I imagine. Right. He's a busy man.
He was really stressed out about that. But I mean, I was there with him the whole summer, and we, you know, he got through it. I mean, he came through with flying colors. I mean, it's amazing. But they literally got it. They caught this thing right before it came out of the prostate. Like, if it had burst through the prostate, it would have spread through his body. So it literally is like 0.1 centimeter or something away from opening. Like, they literally got it in time. The good news was it hadn't opened up. So
well, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. So you had for now said, get your bottom to the doctor.
Literally.
I've got one for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I was good at the beginning. I'm not sure if he was really happy with my nursing skills at the end. I asked him, I said, please, can we just hire somebody to take care of you the first? I don't know how good I'm going to be at this, because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of yucky, you know, medical stuff. It's for me, I'm not a medical person, but it was fine. It worked out. And, you know, I'm really glad that he's doing well now and he's alive. And we dodged that bullet once again. But I can't take total credit. I didn't, like, find the cancer. I just told him to go to the doctor.
Well, so. But that's
where it's got to start, right?
You know, and it's true. I mean, we did a PSA on it, and the cancer, the prostate cancer awareness people wanted us to do a PSA and say, you know, listen to your wife, go to the doctor, you know, use your intuition. And once again, you know, I think it's just – I convinced him to also get therapy at one point during our relationship when the kids were little, because he would come home and he'd sit at the dinner table and he wouldn't speak, and then he'd just yell at the kids. And I was like, this is too much for you to handle right now. We need to, you know, dig in. So we all got therapy, and that worked out too. And he was always very grateful for
that. Can you give our listeners, like, one tool that you might remember from doing therapy as a family that worked for communication with you guys?
Well, when they were little, like, Douglas would, he would start attacking the other two. And they effectively taught us how to use timeouts. And timeouts for toddlers was a book that was written back then. And we just followed that. They were 2 years old or three. And, you know, depending on their age, it's how long their timeout is. And when one of them is doing something wrong, you separate them, you put them in their bedroom for 1, 2, or 3 minutes, depending on their age. And probably not one, they're still pretty little, but and it seems to work quite effectively. But you have to stick to your guns. You have to use those tools. Also, communication with babies, if they can't communicate what they're saying, they're going to get aggressive because they bite or they hit, or if they start to get aggressive, try to figure out what it is that they're looking for, because they're not evil. That's their communication skills. And when you have three and they're just all biting each other and hitting each other, it's like you start to realize, you know, it's hard to contain sometimes. And I mean, when you have one baby, you can communicate a little better, but I don't know. I learned a lot from it. I enjoy communicating with babies now because I kind of get
it. And you're so good at it. You and Magnolia had a whole thing the other night at dinner.
She was so cute.
She loves you. lastly, before we let you go, I just want to, if you, is there anything that you can remember or think of that helped you in those really hard moments when you were overwhelmed, you know, with three kids?
Well, you know, I think
besides the Prozac.
Yeah. Well, I got past that. Okay. The antidepressants were a good help during certain periods of my life just because of my hormonal imbalance. And I don't have anything wrong. I don't have any problems with that. Because
no, we've talked about that a lot.
Depression and anxiety. I was the type of person where I would get so anxious. I just didn't want to get out of bed. Yeah. So, but they worked. But when I was done with that, I found that a timeout for myself is always good too.
That's, you know, genius.
And just saying, okay, mommy needs a timeout now, and just separate yourself. Also,
that's great.
Yeah, wine has been a big help for me over this period of time as well.
Do you, red or white?
Red. Okay. But, you know, Bianca knows that. And now, I honestly, if I think back, taking time for yourself, seriously, to get out and do your own thing occasionally, and also just not losing it. You know what I mean? It takes everything in your power not to smack your kid or get mad and scream or whatever. I mean, there's a difference between being stern and saying no, you know, if they're going to be in danger, and, you know, where you have to slow them down. But just, you know, try to control any kind of emotion where you're going to be, it's going to be harmful to your child, because trauma is like the last thing you want to do to any child, and because it causes pathologies later. I mean, yeah. Smacking your kids around is just not a great idea. So, you know, it's hard for me. I spanked Paulina once because she didn't want, like, the way her hair was done. And then in the first grade, and then I called the teacher and I said, I paddled Paulina. And I said, in case she tells you, I feel a lot of remorse. But, boy, she pushed me that day. And I was like, I can't believe I did that. And I knew better. But it was like, come on, you're going to make the carpool late. And you just have to, you know, yeah. Calm down. Your hair is fine. Like, please. Like, and Drew was touring with Adam, and they were gone for a week. And I was alone with the kids. And I just lost it, you know. But then I had to call all the people that had witnessed it. I'd tell the woman in the carpool, because I figured my daughter would say, my mom just hit me. And then I had to call the first grade teacher and I'd tell her, and I was like, okay, I just want to, you know, I don't do this typically, but I lost it, you know. So that's my biggest advice, is just try to step back and don't dance, you know. Be present and thoughtful and loving.
And also just be gentle with yourself, because, you know, I mean, it happens, and I totally understand. And certainly in your case where you have three kids, it's like, you know, we're human beings and you can only take so much. And I, you know, it's
hard. And
that's
where our own timeout comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
Move from the situation
exactly.
If we need to take deep breaths.
Yeah, so be gentle. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm honored to be around such beautiful, intelligent, wonderful women.
We'll right back at you.
I don't know. Well, we'll see.
We'll be right back. We're back.
We're back.
That was so much fun. I love
that.
Susan
was so fun. I asked her at the beginning of the podcast if there was anything like that she didn't want to discuss, and she's like, I am uncensored. And she came through with that.
Yes, she did.
With flying colors. She was wonderful and wild.
Yeah, I feel very grateful to have her and Drew in our lives. And I have to tell you, like, I was very intimidated, I remember, the first time I met Drew, and then subsequently Susan, because they seem like such a power couple, right?
They're for just sure.
And they're both so real and lovely and funny, and I just have they've been a very welcome addition into my life because of Mike, so I'm happy.
She's
about
so
that.
Honest.
Yeah, I love that. I love the honesty. It's great.
She was awesome. I can't wait to
go on her podcast.
Yeah, together.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Atomic Moms.
You got a mom session?
I have a mom bomb. Oh,
you have a mom bomb. That's right. I got the mom session.
My mom bomb is okay. So Barry Schwartz did a TED Talk, and it was about one of the things he talks about is how unhappy we are because of all the choices that we have in our lives. And so it just is like exhausting. Because it used to be, oh, there was like two pairs of jeans that were your options. Now there's like thousands, or like how many paint colors there are.
Oh, yeah.
So whatever you choose, you feel like you might not be choosing the one that you should have chosen.
So true.
And so I laughed out loud when I heard him say this line in the TED Talk. The secret to happiness is low expectations.
Oh,
the secret to happiness is low expectations.
Or even no expectations.
Yeah, that's good. That's even better.
Let's rewrite it for him.
Yeah.
No, but it's so true. I mean, I was thinking about that the other day when I went shopping, and I was just like, oh my God, you feel like you have to have all this stuff. And like, we were okay at a point with just, I mean, I wore uniforms to school for the first 8 years of school. And I mean, I didn't know any different. I was like, put the same clothes on every day when I went to school. Okay, mom session. So in our interview with Susan Pinsky, she talked about the little bags that I always have with Magnolia. And that's actually something my mom used to do when we were growing up. They called them healing bags because my dad loved to sail. We went sailing a lot. And when the boat would heel, which is when it kind of goes on its side, my mom made healing bags. So it's H-E-A-L-I-N-G. And they were bags that would keep us busy and still. So we would only stay on one side of the boat when it was tipping to the side. And that's how she kind of kept us safe. Nowadays they're called busy bags, which I think is a really cute name too. So, busy bags are, I mean, they work for any age range from an infant to a toddler to an older kid. And it's just a bag that you pack with a lot of fun, interesting things to keep your kid busy. You can go on Pinterest, just put in busy bags, and there are so many ideas and fun things. But like when I'm in a pinch, I literally just go to Target. I get a toiletries bag. A clear one's pretty fun because they can see in there and see there's lots of stuff in it. And then I buy toothbrushes, and I buy travel size bottles that she can take the lids off and stuff. I'll take chapstick, big chapstick, because you know she always get the chapstick out of my purse and like pull the cap off and make sure it's at one of the bigger caps, and I scoop all the chapstick out of it and then I close it so she has something to like open and shut. It's just being creative, and they're really fun, and I have about four or five of them, and they're stacked in a shelf by our front door. And so anytime we go out to dinner or we go on a trip, I just grab those puppies, throw them in, and we're good to go. And it's good because I keep them away from her so that she doesn't really see them, so it's like a new thing every time she sees it. So get yourself a busy bag, and for older kids you can do puzzles. And Pinterest is awesome. You have to check out Busy
Bags. I'm going
to
do it.
Yeah. Sounds
good. We have a flight coming up.
All right, you guys. Right. We'll see you next week. Remember, trust in your goodness.
Live out your greatness.
And rock on.
Atomic Moms.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. No need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny, and I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.